fight to make ends meet. Keeps a man upon his feet. Just holding down his job. Tried to show he can't be bought. It takes every kind of people to make what life's about, yeah. Every kind of people to make the world go round. Someone's looking for a lead. His duty to a king or to a creed, protecting what he feels is right. Fights against the wrong within his life. There's no profit in deceit. Honest men know that revenge does not taste sweet. Whether yellow, black or white, each and every man's the same inside. It takes every kind of people.
Yes, indeed, it does take every kind of people. And we are continuing the discussion we began on Monday. We're talking all week about the elections in the aftermath of Super Tuesday and the fallout from it. Of course, much to discuss today as well, and so we continue. Well, they are leading the pack of candidates vying for nomination by their parties to be the standard bearers in the general election. But even as Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are outpacing fellow contenders at the polls in primary elections, they also are carrying a lot of political baggage that not only weighs against them, but also could be too much for their parties to bear. So we'll be talking about that today. What are these pieces of luggage that come with Hillary Clinton being the front runner for the Democratic Party and Donald Trump being the front runner for the Republican Party? Big news today, Mitt Romney just took a major swipe at Donald Trump, calling him a fraud and a phony, and saying that he should be nowhere close to the White House, let alone in it, and that a vote for Trump, if Trump is elevated to the status of standard bearer for the Republican Party, it all but guarantees a Hillary Clinton win. So Mitt Romney, who himself ran for president, as you recall, he says, you know what, I'm not with this guy, nor is the Republican establishment with this guy, and so we ought to move away from him. We know, of course, in recent days, the hubbub around Donald Trump concerns his unwillingness, it's been reported, to part ways or to absolutely denounce and distance himself from David Duke, the head, I suppose, of some major official, I hate to use that word, but the Ku Klux Klan, who allegedly had endorsed Donald Trump. And then there was a story about Donald Trump's father being involved in a riot in New York City at some point that involved his arrest, and it was in the context of a march by the Ku Klux Klan in Queens, and they ran up against a rival group, mostly of so-called fascists. Well, you know what that means. This is how it works. They're saying the Ku Klux Klan and the fascists are duking it out in Queens, New York. Essentially, what they're saying is that the European Americans, those people at the time considered pure of purer blood, were fighting the fascists. That's an interesting word that is used to describe Italians, mostly Italians. So that's how the words are used, like the word evangelical in this current round of elections being raised quite heavily. The evangelicals, meaning white people, who believe in God and the Bible. They are different from other people who believe in God and the Bible. They have different names, but the whites who believe in God and the Bible, in this political discourse, they're called evangelicals. Well, you know, it is getting worse by the minute, but today I would like us to discuss, from your perspective, what you see the baggage to be. Not that we really care, that we should shed a tear that the baggage of Hillary Clinton should cause some uproar within the Democratic Party, or that the baggage of Donald Trump should cause some kind of an uproar within the Republican Party. But I didn't talk about Hillary Clinton. Her former staffer, who was with the State Department, has been granted immunity in the current investigation, federal investigation, yet another federal investigation that has Hillary Clinton in the crosshairs. This has to do with emails that were transmitted and received via a personal server that Hillary Clinton had installed in her home. And the person who did that installation and who maintained the server, Brian Pagliano, who worked for the State Department, was given immunity by the Justice Department in the current federal inquiry. That may mean one of two things. Either they really are zooming in on Hillary Clinton, and with the idea of some kind of a prosecution coming out of this related to the emails, or this is yet another way of covering things up by saying, look, we have done everything, that we've conducted a thorough investigation, and we find no reason to prosecute Mrs. Clinton. So it's one of those two things. I draw your attention today to a very interesting piece that was published by The Atlantic. You can read it at theatlantic.com, and it is titled, From Whitewater to Benghazi, a Clinton Scandal Primer. Now, that tells you That's a direct reference to the baggage I was talking about earlier. There's a lot of baggage that Hillary Clinton brings, except that for some reason, it has all but disappeared in the coverage of her campaign, in the coverage of political discourse. We're not hearing that there's any downside at all to this candidate. Hillary Clinton is presented to us as a nice, fresh face, completely unconnected and disconnected from anything bad or evil or questionable or underhanded or unethical. And yet she has a long history, and she shares that shady history with her husband, Bill Clinton, the former president, with whom she was co-president of the United States. There's a long history of really wretched stuff, really awful stuff associated with the Clintons, and particularly with Hillary Clinton. And yet, in this campaign, we have a deliberate effort to expunge all of that, to say it is not important. And now that it looks like she is gaining momentum, the Republicans are seeing her as a threat, and they see Donald Trump's election, or since he's in the forefront of the pack, that if he comes to represent, in the minds of the old guard, establishment Republicans, if he comes to represent what the Republican Party stands for, they are absolutely sure that everything goes to hell. And it's a very interesting situation, don't you think? So let's talk a bit about that. What do you see as the liabilities here from a purely tactical perspective and a strategic perspective. We are clear that, there are major problems with both of these candidates that make them completely undesirable. But at the same time, the reality is they are in the forefront. In the case of Donald Trump, by waging a kind of strategic military move, funding his own campaign, maintaining a dialogue that people find really repulsive, racist, and a dark kind of language, and reflecting the anger of a vast section of America that finds itself awakened because they are hearing sympathetic expressions from Donald Trump, and they're moving to support him. But on the other hand, we also have Hillary Clinton, who is an enigma, as Churchill said, wrapped in a puzzle, wrapped in a mystery, as to how it is this woman has managed to be elevated to such heights and has managed to evade justice, I would say. And not only that, now looms large on the national and even international scene as a person who obviously belongs where she belongs. A very fascinating thing, her ascendancy. And it is being aided and abetted and assisted by a compliant media. In both cases, the candidacy of Donald Trump, the creation also of the media, and the candidacy of Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side. Your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Is it possible that there is a moment here, just purely from a political and strategic perspective, is there a moment here for, again, the progressive community to use this moment where we have telltale signs that all is not well despite what is being told us? For example, I remarked yesterday about the significance of Bernie Sanders' win of 4 states. Yes, Hillary Clinton won 7 states in the big election on Super Tuesday. However, you have to look at it in perspective. When you calculate the fact that Hillary Clinton has been out there, has been a known entity for a long time, has had the advantage of name recognition and the advantage of public life, the advantage of being the first lady of Arkansas, the being the first lady of the nation, being co-president with Bill Clinton of the United States, being in the U.S. Senate, and all these things. Despite all of that, Bernie Sanders captured 4 states on Super Tuesday. What does that mean? It means that there are enough people who really don't want to associate themselves with her. It means that the Democratic Party has failed to calculate that people don't like her. They really don't. The polls have said that both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have that in common. They're wildly popular, but frankly, people don't like them for one reason or another. They're just great against people's nerves. So you have 2 front runners who are also highly disliked. And what does that mean for energizing the electorate? In the case of what we just went through with Super Tuesday, you see also a dramatic downturn in voter turnout. Despite the fact that she had all these ambassadors running and churning out every possible vote, the rate of turnout was remarkably low. And this was very interesting because it clearly showed, this is important, you can't dismiss it, had the black vote not been churned up and turned out for Hillary Clinton, she would have had no prayer at all on Super Tuesday. You see, this is the thing, and this is why I said that you have to understand the historic the historic symbolism of South Carolina. This was where the black community, through its through its bold leaders, this is where the black community could have wielded a really mighty cudgel and extracted from the Democratic Party all kinds of concessions, because without the black vote, Hillary Clinton herself had said she would have no firewall. I mean, that was a distressing way to talk about the black vote, as a firewall, as a tinder for this, this fire that she expects to burn bright for her. But the truth of it is, they knew, the Democratic Party knows what everybody knows, and that is people are not too thrilled about them. So they have to go to those constituencies that historically have been loyal. And had the black community not turned out in South Carolina and other southern states, she wouldn't have a prayer. Her candidacy, in other words, this is my hypothesis, her candidacy could have been destroyed right there. She could have been torpedoed right there. And the political muscle of the African American community certainly could have played the decisive role in either just finishing her candidacy and moving on to somebody else. And the somebody else could have certainly been Bernie Sanders, and it could have forced a move, again, a movement within the party away from the establishment of the party. Now, this is wishful thinking, in a sense, because we know the establishment is firmly entrenched, but I'm making the case here because it had worked before. It worked with Jesse Jackson. It certainly worked with Barack Obama to some degree. Of course, we know that Obama was really an establishment candidate. But I'm saying here, look at it from a strategic point of view. The opportunity was lost, and it was orchestrated that way. And these so-called black elected leaders within the Democratic Party essentially lost for their constituencies, their various constituencies, the opportunity to exact a political price. And the political price would have been to compel Clinton, to compel the party to recognize and deal with and concede to putting as part of the planks of the party platform this presidential year critical issues that mattered to these communities, and they decided not to do it. And that's why you have to wag a finger. Jesse Jackson betrayed us in 1984 and in 1988, and Barack Obama did the same in 2008 and 2012. Hillary Clinton proposes to repeat that horrible pattern, and we should do something about it. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hello, David.
With Hillary Clinton, I think about the old adage, you are known by the company you keep, and you're known by the, you know, the friends you have. And with the damage that her husband did to black people when he was in with the mass incarceration and all these laws that affected black people and workers and whatnot, why would you want to get someone like that again? It's sickening to see the New York Times, I know, that supports her, to see those front page pictures of these black people hooping and hollering for this woman and not knowing or not remembering all the things that her husband did and then what she did with Libya, destroying that country. And, you know, it just is... We can't talk about how white people don't function in their own interests like they did in the book, What's the Matter with Kansas Anymore, because black people are doing the same thing. There's no future in the Democratic Party for black folks. We need to think about getting out of that thing. So, you know, that's the thing. It's so hard to read the paper. I know the Times is for her, and they supposedly did a report on what happened in Libya, and they leave out important strategic things like the condition of the Libyan people during the Gaddafi regime, and they don't say anything about that, and they don't say anything about what he was planning to help the African continent with, the bank and the various other things that the ruling classes here did not want. No mention of that whatsoever.
What do you see as, I mean, assuming that there was a movement, a progressive movement at this time in play, what do you see as a way to take advantage, if you will, of this particular weak spot?
Well, that's not an easy one. The thing is that we'd have to get enough people out there who would start getting all this information out and spreading it to the community. I think that would be one step that we could take. I know it's hard because we don't have the media on our side. The media is completely controlled, with certain exceptions, by the ruling class, and they don't want you to know these things. But people don't have information. So they have, for some reason, this black people have this affinity to celebrate the Clintons for some reason, even though they have proved to be the enemy in the black community in terms of some of these things that have gone on with the Clinton administration, the COVID. So if they go along with this Clinton person, this would be like a third term for Bill Clinton. That's all it is, a third term for Bill Clinton. And we don't need that. And I think that it's important that we start becoming conscious of these facts and have some kind of historical memory of what went on. I mean, Clinton led to all these black men being locked up in jail and all these draconian laws and all these things that damage labor and whatnot. Why would you want somebody like that to have a third term? And, you know, I call that Clinton's third term. So I'm very much opposed to this type of thing, and it saddens me to see pictures of people hooping and hollering in black churches for this woman.
Thank you so much, Stu, for getting the conversation started today, David. Thank you. From New York, Matt, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon to the family. I agree very much wholeheartedly with David. And let me say that people like Hillary Clinton, those of us who try to see the what is called the deep state, when they set up the bank and after they invaded Iraq and set up the bank, and you know that report where she runs into the bank and has some nefarious dealings. I recently heard a report that, like Gary Webb, the alleged suicide of Foster. I can't think of his first name right now, but found dead in a park. He was actually shot twice, and it's a supposed suicide. So the problem is when you have these people, these elites, and many of these Negroes who are all rubber stamping her candidacy, none of these people, no matter what they do, can be put in prison. And the reason why I say that is when you set up a whole prison system unprecedented on the planet, 4% of the population, 25% of its prisoners, based on black and brown people, you know, which is an important interconnection with how the police walk in our community. So people taking out the garbage in public housing, get in jail for trespassing or get summonses. So it's gotten to a point where all I can say, and you make me have a good chuckle, you trees, through your analysis, but what a kettle of fish what a rotten stew this is all is. I'm wondering whether you heard about the incident at Valdosta University where a number of black students had no posters, no banners, were just quietly wanting to see what the Trump... They were actually put out by the social service and outside crying because, you know, a young person, how they would respond. So it's to the point now where the country seems to be going down the literal drain, the toilet. I mean, this guy Trump, and thank you for the information about that demonstration. What was that in the 19, clarify the date on that.
1927. It was supposed to be in 1927.
The KKK. So it's all coded. It's all dog whistle politics. And it's at a point that some of us wish we had some alternatives in terms of picking up and going somewhere else. But where does one go? Because we are dealing with a Virginia. Yes, there is a New World Order agenda.
Well, thank you for contributing today, Matt. Thanks for your call. New York is prevailing today. Here's Ali. Hello, Ali.
Hi, Idris. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. Well, what do you think? Okay. Does the Democratic Party have a problem with Hillary Clinton as its forerunner? Does the Republican Party have a problem with Donald Trump as its forerunner?
Okay, the first thing that I have to say is that tomorrow at 4:30, one of my group, we're going to be in, right by Wall Street, by the federal building, and we're going to have a protest against Donald Trump. So I'm inviting all those listeners that they always talk, but I wanted to know if they're out there doing what I have been doing, protesting, complaining, and doing things like that. So I just wanted to invite all those New Yorkers to calm down at 4:30. Thank you. But this is what I wanted to say about Hillary. But before I say something about Hillary, I wanted to say something about a gentleman. It was your last call on Monday, and this gentleman by the name of George called you. And
yes.
Then he said, he made it a statement. He said, he thinks that lying should not be allowed. And I was just laughing when he said that, because if lying should not be allowed, none of the politicians will be in Washington, D.C. And another thing, I think the media itself will disappear, because this is what it's all about. That is why this woman won in North Carolina. One of the things about Hillary Clinton is, this is for the people of color, for the people that we have color. I wanted to say, just alone what she did, she had done in Haiti, and what she's continued doing in Haiti, that woman should not be voted in by black and Latinos. Just that alone, that woman invaded Libya. I mean, this country, this government, and this the so-called black president went into that country, and how can this woman have so power to be able to convince him to go and destroy that country where people have free education and free health care, the things that we don't have in this country? So that alone, we should think about it. We should think about not supporting that woman alone. But then again, then if you see at who is running, I mean Trump and these two Cubans, I just wanted to say, have you ever heard those two Cubans say anything about the Latinos, the group that they belong to? No, because they're serving, like you have been saying, they're serving just one group and one group only. But of course, when they get picked to run in the Republican side, oh, now they're going to be speak Spanish to the Latinos. And you know what? And I hope that the stupid Latinos that are out there, they don't get fooled by them. And I just wanted to say this. I just download this week, a podcast for this gentleman. That his name is Ian Master. He used to have the show in WBI. Now something happened that he doesn't have the show no more. So I download one of his show. And when he was interviewing, talking about Donald Trump, and then he was talking about one of the two Cubans, then when he finished with one, then he said to the gentleman who was talking about politics and about Trump and the other two, he said, and what happened to the other Cuban, to the other American Cuban? So I want them to realize that they're still Cuban. I don't care that they have a mask and portraying themselves that they're so white, that the KKK is going to accept them. At the end of the day, they're Latinos and they're Cubans, and they have to check that box. Unless for the next census they eliminate the box for the Cubans, and then the minorities that's going to be a minority in 2033, they eliminate the box so they could be part of the white group, because that's what they're doing. They taking some of the group and they mixing it up with the white. They giving white line so they could just never become a minority like the rest of us in 2033. And then you keep saying that it could even be earlier.
Thank you very much, Ali. From Virginia, Walter, you're on the air.
Oh, Yatrice.
Hello.
How are you? Hello, Yatrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Do you think that at this moment, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton both pose some kind of problems for their respective parties?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's no doubt. And I just wanted to touch on something that you had started your program with earlier in terms of the Atlantic article that you mentioned, in terms of the baggage that Hillary Clinton brings. I called about a week ago and spoke about, you know, why would you want to bring another Clinton into the office, specifically with all the drama that they've had, all of their political careers. And I specifically cited the three incidents within the White House while Clinton was president, in terms of Monica Lewinsky, which was just a peculiar circumstance, but also the two mysterious deaths of Vince Foster and Ron Brown. And so, you know, I didn't want to give short shrift to that, because a lot of people might overlook that, and of course it's not being brought up in the media in terms of, yes, all that happened under Hillary Clinton's watch as well, and, you know, what she may have done or said about it. But then to the other point that you made in terms of the African Americans, in terms of them backing Hillary Clinton, and I think there's a wide age gap in terms of their support. I do know that, you know, I'm backing Bernie Sanders, but my parents are Hillary Clinton supporters, and I think it's basically a matter of age and access to information. I think that folks that are generally over 60, 65 years of age don't have the same access to the types of information for folks that are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, that have more of an IT kind of savviness and get to alternate media. For instance, when I asked my parents, you know, had they heard certain things about Hillary Clinton in terms of her emails, in terms of her super predator comments and whatnot, they had no idea that that existed. And one of the reasons why is they're, you know, they're not on the internet. They're not, you know, basically looking on anything on social media. So basically what they get is mainstream media, which of course is not going to portray those types of things. So I think it's a matter of information access. And if we can start to shift that for some of the younger folks to share that type of access with the older folks that don't generally have it, I think it can help them become more informed and more aware.
Well, then, what do you see as a strategic move that the progressive community can make at this time, because it's beginning to cause a problem, and it is not at all unnoticed within the ranks of the Democratic and Republican parties? So is there some strategic use or some strategic value to the dilemma that the Republicans and the Democrats are experiencing now with their front-runner candidates?
Well, in terms of the progressives, in terms of getting the more progressive movements out there and a coalition of all the various progressive independent parties, you know, I spoke with Gary on his program earlier today about that, and, you know, it's a matter of basically trying to get the message out via social media, because it'll never happen through mainstream media, because, you know, it's just totally controlled by the corporatists. So with that said, you know, I think it's up to the new forms of media in terms of getting that out, in terms of getting alternative messages, alternative information to a wider audience. As millennials become more and more established in terms of society, and in terms of more political roles and more of leaders of industry and whatnot, I think, you know, that message will start to spread. And they're looking at probably a 10 to 15 year window for that to happen in true earnest, for lots of money to start flowing in behind those types of thoughts. But when it comes to the African-American community, I think the shift should begin now with us. You know, you talk about some of our established leaders like a Jesse Jackson and some of the folks that throughout the church network, which Hillary Clinton has kind of tapped into. And I think the answer to that lies in an Upton Sinclair quote when he said, "It is difficult for a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it." And until we can start to shift that, okay, and start to take that away as a means of advancement for these folks that are basically entrenched into that thinking because they think that's where their bread is buttered, then we can start to see a real progression in the movement around African Americans getting behind a new party and a new coalition of thoughts and ideas that will really advance us all as a people.
Thank you so much, Walter, for your call today. From
Thank
Brooklyn,
you.
Stephen, you're on the air.
Hi, Ruth. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. What do you think about this baggage, the political baggage that each of the candidates, the front-running candidates, Hillary Clinton in the Democratic Party and Donald Trump in the Republican Party, that they are having at the moment?
Well, it's funny that you use political baggage because I use the same context. There's this gentleman at my job, he's African-American, he's West Indian. He's about 60, and he's a Hillary fan. So the other day, I go up to him, and I say, "Did you know anything about the Senator comment that she made back in 96? So, you know, he's saying, "Oh, show me proof. So then I pull up the YouTube video. Within 30 seconds of the video, "Oh, it's propaganda. So I say, "When is the truth considered propaganda?" And it's just amazing how, you know, people just, when the truth is out there, they just don't accept it. I don't understand what it is about the Clintons that have African Americans so in a trance to just vote for her without even knowing any type of knowledge of what she's done and of what her history is. It's just crazy.
So what do you think? I hate to put it this way, but of what use could this dilemma or this burgeoning dilemma be to independent-minded people like yourself?
Well, what use?
What use could you put this to, this information, this dilemma that these parties are having with their front-running candidates?
I mean, ignorance is bliss. I mean, Malcolm X put it best. I mean, we have to have political, political maturity. And, you know, we don't have that. And it's, you know, people like me try to get information out there. I'm 37 years old. And, I mean, you know, it's all I got to do is try to get information out there. But it's up to the people who don't want to accept it. I mean, how can you vote for the same Democratic Party that's, you know, always preach on change and come into neighborhoods and try to get your vote, but then when it's time to vote, you know, you give them your vote, and then when they're in office, you know, nothing's done. Take a look at Obama. And, you know, the same gentleman that I was referring to, you know, I bring up the example of the police shootings and how, you know, you have Obama not even, you know, doing what he can for the African-American people. And his, you know, response is, well, he has to be a certain way so that he doesn't cater to the African-American. Okay, so I give him that argument. So then I bring up Eric Holder. How come Eric Holder isn't doing anything? Oh, they're investigating. Those were his answers. So I'm like, what are they investigating? You know, it's just, you know, people are just they're just sitting on their hands and sit on their hands and just accept anything. It's just, you know, it bothers my mind. It really does.
Yes, it does. Thank you, Stephen, for calling today. We go to the other David from Brooklyn.
How are you, Trish?
Fine, thank you. How are you? Do you think this situation is going to essentially pose a huge problem for both the Democratic and Republican parties, the baggage of Hillary Clinton and the baggage of Donald Trump?
I just think that Hillary was selected and she's going to be elected. And your last caller said something about ignorance is bliss. I call it obliviousness is bliss. Because it's the dumbed-down populace, which, of course, except for the PRN audience, they're going for Hillary. Eric Garner's mother came out and said, I'm for Hillary. But anyway, I have to apologize. A couple of months ago, I used the N-word on your show because I wanted to tell the story accurately. And I
but you did. It was not offensive. You put it in an appropriate context.
I'm not going to say the word again, but he said, oh, there's the unlover. And they said, you a Jim Crow disciple? He didn't know who Jim Crow was. So that shows you that. And he asked how I am. I'm a bit, the weather's a bit over me, put it to you that way.
But let's anyway, talk about, let me ask you, do you believe that the attacks now coming from within the party, in the case of Donald Trump, I mean, it's open. People within the party, old establishment is really ganging up against him, insisting that he is just not to be the candidate who gets the nomination. What does this suggest to you?
I mean, the fix is in for Hillary. They're all in on it, the whole thing. Like Romney said he's ruining the party, he shouldn't be anywhere near it. He knew he wasn't going to be the president when he ran in 2012 by saying 40% of the vote is definitely going to Obama, I don't care about them. He said this in public, and over 90% of people have cell phones and all that, unlike me. I could live without it, except when I can't hear your show when I go out. But I think they're all in cahoots.
So what interest would Romney, a Republican, have in trying to destroy Donald Trump's leading position? I mean, how could that possibly be that Romney is, in effect, working Hillary Clinton's agenda?
Because he worked Obama's agenda by dissing 47% of all the voters. He killed himself just by speaking. So why wouldn't he kill any other Republican? Because he knows the game. He's part of the game.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for calling today and contributing. Jay from New York. New York is just leading in the polls right now. What's going on here? Jay, you're on the air.
It's because of your days back at BAI and the love that we have for you and how much we miss you. You know, let's keep it real. That's one of the reasons why. You know, Sister Utrice, I have been listening to you, like I said, for years. I've been listening to your analysis on Hillary Clinton, and based on a lot of the things that you're saying and trying to look at this thing a little bit out of the normal spectrum, I have come to the conclusion that I will be voting for Donald Trump. Donald Trump can't be no better or no worse than Hillary Clinton. If he just does one thing that he says that he's going to do, and that is bring jobs to America, then that, I think, could help Americans way more than Hillary Clinton will ever be able to do. And the reason why I say this, Utrice, and I will be repeating this continuously, is he says that he wants to deport the illegal immigrants in this country, which I know can't happen. But in the process, what can happen is to make these American businesses hire these people the proper way or not hire them at all. And in the process, what that may be able to do is to get American blacks and Latinos the opportunity to get some of this work that may happen if he's allowed to build up the infrastructure in this country that I must admit that the Republicans have not allowed Obama to do. But then again, if you really think about it, maybe Obama didn't really want to do it, because I've been hearing through the grapevine that he's about to nominate a white woman for the Supreme Court. There has been things that Obama has done with the association of Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party that, if we sit back and be honest, are detrimental to all Americans and so-called Democrats who support them.
But now, let me ask you, you know this is an election year, and you know people are going to say all kinds of things. I'll bring jobs. Who doesn't, who will not say that? I mean, everybody's saying they'll bring a bunch of jobs and cause a great uptick in the market, and everybody would have a job and things would be fine again. So Donald Trump is just talking stuff. He has not yet put out a plan that is credible about generating jobs and improving the unemployment situation. Well, but let me ask you this. We're talking not so much about what they want to do or what they say they want to do. We're talking about the fact that it appears trouble is brewing. So do you think at this point, where the Republican Party establishment is essentially attacking a fellow Republican, and in the case of Hillary Clinton, more and more we're seeing the baggage that she is carrying, and at some point it will pose a problem for the Democratic Party. It hasn't so far because she's been getting favorable press, and she has in place her so-called firewall of the black voters and the different constituencies that also will be surrounding her. To what strategic advantage could this be to a progressive movement, the situation as it exists?
Well, first of all, that firewall population is her savior. The sad thing is that they won't listen to anyone who opposes her. They don't have an agenda to look at someone from, let's say, a third party that could put forward a message. And then if we're really going to be truthful, Utrice, nobody from the third party has put together any type of honest platform to attract those people.
Are you saying Bernie Sanders? Well, let's talk about the Democrats, for example. Bernie Sanders, in your view, doesn't have anything that credibly matches or outdoes what Hillary Clinton has so far put on the table, in your view?
He has some things, but you know what his biggest problem is, Utrice? Like most white people, he doesn't know how to galvanize the black community. He has blown more opportunities to talk to black people than anybody I've ever seen. And I'll give you two quick examples. He refuses to go on the Roland Martin show, and he refused to take advantage of the opportunities to go on, let's say, someone like a Tom Joyner, Steve Harvey, D.L. Hughley, who has these big, big audiences of black people to put forward his agenda. That's why I'm saying this is a game, Utrice, because if me and you were in that position, you know we would both look for avenues to put forward our message to a community that it seems like is totally in the pocket of the candidate based on those situations being available. It's not like it's not available to Bernie Sanders. He has not taken advantage of it. His whole message to me is just centered on the economics and the hopes that he's going to get young people to galvanize like Obama did.
To galvanize.
It's a totally different animal.
Thanks so much for your input today, Jay. I really appreciate it. Again, we are in New York. We haven't left New York. What's going on? Peter, you're on the air.
Hey, Chief.
Hello.
You know, I'm from upstate New York, so I'm a little bit different.
Okay.
And I used to be from the city, but after a while, I decided to get out. So we've run into some new challenges up here, namely the fracking and now the pipelining. So we've got a temporary hold on the fracking. But meanwhile, the gas industry is still pushing ahead under Obama. Obama says he's for clean energy, but in fact, he is allowing the whole infrastructure to be moved forward in a very dramatic way. So pipelines are being installed all over the place, including a Spectra pipeline right into the village, Greenwich Village. So, and it's really tough to fight these people because they have FERC looking out for them. And, you know, it's Federal Energy Rubber Stamp Commission. Basically, they approve any pipeline, any route that a company can dream up. Now, Hillary has accepted money from, in fact, she went to meet with Franklin Square Capital Partners, and they're a hedge fund that invests heavily in fracking. And Bernie, for what it's worth, says that he's very much against fracking. So I think those issues count for a lot. And I always like to believe that there are some candidates that are better than others. I realize that Bernie's not perfect, but how would you ever get a perfect candidate elected, you know? I mean, the Green Party, how would the Green Party ever get one of their candidates elected to the presidency? It's a major challenge.
Well, now, you're right in the neighborhood here of the question. There's evidence, the whole thrust of the discussion is, it appears that there is a burgeoning problem with the front runners. Number one, apart from the fact that most people, they don't take a liking to either of them.
Right.
The voting is down. Again, Hillary Clinton should not, if in fact she was as great as she was and as much loved as she is and so forth, there is no way that Bernie Sanders could have gotten four states. There's just no way. So it means
right.
that there's
Absolutely.
Something wrong there. The architecture is a little weak, and the appeal that the Democrats used to have, it appears that it has waned or is waning. In this situation with respect to Hillary Clinton and a similar situation developing with Donald Trump, where the party establishment has literally declared open warfare on this guy, how does a Bernie Sanders, if he, in fact, has a different message, and if, in fact, he may have a chance, how does he use this to gain traction and to gain ground?
Admittedly, it's a challenge, but, you know, and certainly the corporate media has not been doing him any favors, but we do have the Internet. We have other ways of communicating these days, and evidently that has been a major factor in allowing him a better chance of making a better showing. And who knows, maybe the Republicans will manage to besmirch her reputation even worse than it already is. I've seen alternative candidates come and go, and I thought Ralph Nader was pretty phenomenal, but, you know, he got such a tiny percentage of the vote, and so we have depended so much on corporate media, and corporate media really controls too many of our lives and too many of our minds, you know, and our ways of thinking.
But it's also, I think, something else. It has to do with a reticence, a reluctance, really, to fully engage with an available electorate. And that says that people are hesitant to overcome deep-seated prejudices and ways of working in our society. The Green Party, I talked about this as a major criticism. The attitude of Nader's campaigns was that, you know, you should recognize how smart I am and what a good person I would be if you elect me, and therefore it's your job to come to me. The Green Party takes the same position. We are here, we are good people, and we're doing good things. It's your job to come to us. No, it's quite the opposite. A campaign is really about reaching out to people.
Absolutely.
And reaching out to people on a consistent basis. But in all the years that I have been in New York and doing community work, I rarely, if ever, saw the presence of these parties and individuals in the community that absolutely would embrace their message if only they knew what it was.
I agree with that. I've been an activist for a long time, and Hillary came by, this was quite a number of years ago, with Bill, and she was campaigning for the Senate. And, you know, the local Democratic Party and the members thereof were out there in full force, and everybody was super enthusiastic to meet and shake hands with us, you know, two political stars. And, of course, Hillary has a lovely smile. So she was glad-handing everybody. And then I came up to her, and I had a letter in hand, and I said to her, and the letter was about this. I said to her, Hillary, I'm very concerned about the fact that the U.S. has just embargoed Iraq for 8 years, and that, 500,000 children have died prematurely because of the malnutrition.
Yes, yes.
And immediately when I said the word concerned, I didn't have to go further. Her face changed from joy to sadness. She's just so flexible. You know, she's just such a political animal that she can. Yeah,
they know this thing. They know the game.
Yeah,
I call them the Bonnie
actress,
and Clyde of politics. Thanks,
yeah,
Peter, for your call today for your contribution. And that brings us to the end of our program today. Of course, tomorrow is Free Your Mind Friday. It continues even then. So keep your notes together and get your brains in gear for tomorrow, Free Your Mind Friday. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. I'm working really hard to get current with my correspondence. I'm catching up. So you can jot me a note and let me know what you think of the program and things that you're learning or things that you'd like. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye. Just to make the world cool.